Dear listeners, the presentation you are about to hear is a translation of a series of lectures presented by the great Islamic thinker, Mahmud Muhammad Taha, in 1977, under the title, Simplifying the New Islamic Call. The translation, from Sudanese Arabic into English, is by Mr. Salah Ahmed Farah, a disciple of Mahmud Muhammad Taha. Now listen to the translation, Episode 1. In the name of God, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Verily, we have it, the Quran, revealed on the night of power. And what can make you know what the night of power is? The night of power is grace of 1,000 months. The angels and the spirit descend therein by permission of their Lord for every matter. Peace it is until the break of dawn. God Almighty is truthful. Between us, the Republican brothers, and this glorious Quranic chapter is a great relationship, a great intimate relationship. We may elaborate upon it at a later time. But we would be content at this time, with receiving the blessing of this chapter, in our introduction to a series of talks, intended to clarify the new Islamic call, a call for the revivification of Islam. Today we are in the city of El Mahdiyur, on Saturday the 27th of August 1977, which corresponds to the 13th of Ramadan, 1397. The revivification of Islam means and presupposes that Islam is dead. We have no doubt that Islam, in the bosoms of men and women, has died. Islam today only exists in the Holy Book. People today practice, in the rituals of worship, only the rinds of worship bereaved of its fruit. That is why their worship in fasting, prayer, and pilgrimage, or their rituals of worship, have no effect on their morals. People treat one another in the market, on the street, at school, and at home with a non-Islamic morality. Islam should be in our bosoms, and affect our minds and hearts. It must be reflected in words and deeds. It is both knowledge and morality. The warning is that Islam will disappear and leave the hearts of men and women, and people will be without any weight and will have no value with regards to God. A bad news to this effect is stated below. Fortunately, the good news is also stated. The bad news is stated in several hadiths, such as, you will follow the paths of those nations who were before you, span by span and cubit by cubit, so that even if they entered an abandoned hole of a lizard, you would follow them. It was asked, O God's apostle! Are they the Jews and the Christians? He replied, Whom else? Do you mean by those who were before us, the Jews and Christians? He replied, Whom else? Also, in another hadith that has often been in our writings, soon nations will call each other against you, just as they invite each other to a feast. They asked, O Apostle of God! Will there be few from among us? He replied, No, you will be many, just as much scum is on the flash flood. But God will not care about you. With regard to Christians, their code is largely a set of moral commandments, which does not embrace every aspect of their lives. It does not regulate their entire lives. For example, they go to worship in the church on Sundays and pray, yet they deal with each other, while in the market, everyone according to their own shrewdness, as if God has nothing to do with the market, as if His business is only in the places of worship, in the church. Our religion, we the Muslims, embraces every one of our activities, large and small. Everything that we do or don't do must be religious, and satisfactory with respect to the matters of religion. All of our actions must be worshipful. All of our actions are monitored by our code. There is no action that we do outside of our code that we consider healthy. Rather, those actions are a state of sickness, a state of detachment from religion, a state of non-religion. For example, the similarity that we are now sharing with the Christians is that we pray to God in the mosque. We go to God in the mosque. Our prayers on the surface seem to be good and healthy, but they are essentially spoiled. This is evidenced when we leave the mosque. We do not think that God has concerns in the marketplace. We practice usury, cheating, deception, fraud. All kinds of non-religious acts appear in our dealings within the marketplace. This similarity does exist. Clearly in the Hadith, the great prophet foretold a truthful prophecy. Also, in the other Hadith of, as much scum is on the flash flood, the scum is the layer of extraneous matter that blankets flood water. The analogy between us and it, in the later days, is that we do not have any weight. The scum and the straw, which water carries is light, it has no weight. Our lightness is a signal that our hearts are empty of the words of attestation, there is no deity but God. As it is known that a tiny jot of there is no deity but God is heavier than Mount Uhud on the scale of Judgment Day. The two hadiths of bad news came to pass and are obvious. Today, we Muslims have no weight, and we have no impact on our world. We are, and have been for a long time in our history, deemed weak, colonized, despised, and driven against our will, even more so we do not have any will. Rather, we are driven like grazing livestock. This is very obvious in practices and experiences, up until the present day. I am concerned that this matter is made clear because there cannot be a change in our situation if we are satisfied with our case. There are many of the clergy, imams, preachers, and all who work in this field who say we are as well as one could possibly wish, and we lack nothing. I think this attitude has defeated from the beginning, our desire for change, because if we are as well as one could possibly wish, then what change do we need? It must be fixed in our minds, the sweeping fact that today we have deviated from religion, and we are in a pre-Islamic epoch. The second pre-Islamic epoch has overtaken us. We are living on the ruins of religion, ruins of worship. We have lost our religious morals, and forsaken them. This statement applies to every Islamic country. Therefore, this fact must be fixed in all our minds. If the matter stopped with the bad news, in the way that we presented it here, it would be hopeless. But fortunately, by virtue of divine providence we have received, the good news stated, namely in the Hadith, Islam began as something strange and will revert to being strange as it began, so good tidings for the strangers. It was asked, "Who are those strangers, O Apostle of God?" He replied, "Those who revive my path when it is effaced." Note that he said revive my path, and did not say revive my code. For some people, there is no difference between path and code. In fact, the Islamic public opinion among the theologians is that the path and the code are the same. More than that, the meaning of path, code, and religion are considered the same. But the truth is otherwise. The truth is that each of these words, the path, code, and religion, has its own meaning. The difference between them is not in nature, but rather in their degree. Code is the branch of religion that is closest to the ground of the ordinary person. It is the branch of religion that descended to the ground of the ordinary person, to address them according to the level of their intellect, to solve their problems as they have existed to the best of their capabilities. Religion is the stem that descended from God, from His lofty height, to the ground of the ordinary person, to show them His way, and draw their path closer to Him, to guide them. The code is that branch, the branch, which descended to the ground of the ordinary person, on the tongues of the apostles, to direct the path of nations towards God. This is the code. The path is a grade above the code. It is the prophet's exclusive obligation. The difference between the path and code is like the difference between the prophet and the ordinary Muslims of his nation, because the code is the genre, which is applicable to them, while the path is a genre, which is applicable to the prophet. We say that the path is an upgraded code, in a sense that the five daily prayers are code that is prescribed for the ordinary practitioners and also prescribed for the prophet. However, by way of example, additional prayers are part of the path of the Prophet or the personal code of the Prophet, specifically the late night prayer. The late night prayer is prescribed for the Prophet, but not for the ordinary practitioner. It is recommended that the ordinary practitioner perform the late night prayer, while it is prescribed for the Prophet, and some part of the night awake for it, a blessing for you. Maybe your Lord will raise you to a praised station. Also, another verse states, O you wrapped up in your clothing. Keep vigil the night long but a little. Perhaps half of that, or abate a little of that. Or add a little there to enchant the Quran in measure. For we shall charge you with a word of weight. All is in fact, to prepare him for this great thing called prophethood. The Prophet spent 15 years of worship in Hira cave. Then revelation came to him with the prophetic Quran. First starting with, read, in the name of your Lord who creates man from a clot. Read, and your Lord is the most bounteous, who teaches by the pen, teaches man that which he knew not. Then, the prophetic Quran went on, noon, I swear by the pen, and that with which they write, you are not, for your Lord's favor to you, a madman. And indeed, for you is a reward uninterrupted. And indeed, you are of a great moral character. And then the revelation of the prophetic Quran continues, O you wrapped up in your clothing. Keep vigil the night long, but a little. A half of that, or abate a little of that. Or add a little there to enchant the Quran in measure. For we shall charge you with a word of weight. Indeed. The vigil of the night is a time when impression is more keen and speech more certain. Indeed. You have by day a chain of business. So remember the name of your Lord, and devote yourself with a complete devotion. Then after that came the apostolic Quran starting with, O you enveloped in your cloak, arise and warn. Your Lord magnify, your clothing purify, pollution shun, and show not favor, seeking worldly gain. For the sake of your Lord, be patient. Falling under the prophetic Quran, which was revealed perhaps before the command to carry the call, chapter 74, is, I swear by the morning hour, and by the night when it is stillest, your Lord has not forsaken you nor has he become displeased. And certainly the hereafter is better for you than the first life. And certainly your Lord will give to you, so that you will be content. Did he not find you an orphan and protect you? And he found you aimless. He gave you guidance, and he found you poor, he made you rich. Therefore the orphan oppress not, therefore the beggar drive not away, therefore of the bounty of your Lord be your discourse. Also, falling under the early prophetic Quran, perhaps before the command to carry the call, have we not expanded for you your bosom, and eased you of the burden, which weighed down your back, and exalted your fame? But indeed, with hardship goes ease. Indeed. With hardship goes ease. So, when you are relieved, still toil, and strive to please your Lord. In fact the prophetic code, which we call the path, came before the apostolic code. That means, our prophet was first appointed as prophet, and then became apostle, after he was fully developed, after he was strong enough and able to undertake the call. In a revelatory hadith, it is stated that, my Lord has disciplined me well. Then he said, take the superfluous, enjoin what is good, and turn away from the ignorant. The first part of this hadith, my Lord has disciplined me well, refers to the course of prophethood, while its second part is in the course of apostleship. Then he said, take the superfluous, enjoin what is good, and turn away from the ignorant. So, the path, in its special obligation, is higher than the code, as the code is for the ordinary practitioners while the path is exclusively for the prophet. Indeed, this matter does not manifest itself in anything as clearly as it appears in matters of money. The obligation of the prophet concerning money is far higher than that of the ordinary Muslim. The obligation of the Prophet in one of the pillars of Islamic worship, almsgiving, would not be fulfilled unless he gives up all that is superfluous. He should not hoard up the livelihood of one day for future use. His directive Quranic verse from the Book of God states, "And they ask you what they ought to spend in almsgiving. Say, that which is superfluous." The superfluous has been interpreted by the Prophet as whatever exceeds present needs. Yet, this pillar of worship is for the ordinary Muslim, rests on the directive verse, "Take from their wealth alms, you would cleanse them and purify them thereby, and pray for them. Surely your prayer is a relief to them," which abrogated the verse, "And they ask you what they ought to spend in almsgiving. Say, that which is superfluous." The pillar of worship, concerning almsgiving, is one of the five pillars of Islam, as stated in the Hadith. Islam is raised on five, testifying that there is no deity but God, that Muhammad is his apostle, the establishment of prayer, payment of alms. However, the original almsgiving is that of the Prophet alone. The original pillar of worship is that prescribed for the Prophet and exercised by the Prophet. Yet, for the ordinary practitioner's own good, their obligatory pillar of worship has been set at the level of hoarding up the minimum amount of wealth liable to the payment of alms. Then, after 1 year has passed, one should pay one-tenth, half of one-tenth, or a quarter of one-tenth, according to the amounts levied in the Code on Personal Wealth, which is known to us as the alms tax. So, the almsgiving practiced by the ordinary worshipper is not the pillar of worship referred to in the above hadith about five pillars, except in that it exists as a substitute for the original pillar that was practiced by the Prophet. Clearly, this difference between the ordinary practitioner and the Prophet in the obligation of money existed because of the difference between the prophethood and the apostleship, between the Prophet and the ordinary Muslims of his nation. This even includes those from the top of his nation. That means the difference between the Prophet and Abu Bakr, the leading companion, is an immense and incalculable difference. Despite the greatness of the status of Abu Bakr in religion, in Islam, and in faith, there is a tremendous difference between them. A difference exists between the path and code, which is maintained in many forms of conduct and obligation. But money exposes it more than anything else, because money is, of course, an unfaltering gauge. People can profess and claim, but when the matter of money comes, it distinguishes the sincere from the insincere. It shows the great difference between people.